Hello, and welcome to episode 11 of the Pocket Dojo podcast, the show where we talk about making the world a better place by making better things. Hi, Paul Crick.
And I'm Asha Singh. Today, this is the first of two thematic episodes that we will be releasing from the first series of the podcast during the month of May.
Today, we're looking at why leadership practice needs to change so that we can regenerate the natural world, our society, and the economy.
First, we're looking back at what we need to lead effectively today and what it means to regenerate.
And then we'll review how we can reconnect with ourselves, both our inner and outer nature, and what we see around us in the outer world.
Great. Let's dive in. So, leadership, what does it mean to lead ourselves and others, is a long-discussed topic in and around all kinds of organisations. In 2019, Forbes magazine estimated that some $366 billion were being spent annually on leadership development of some kind around the world, whether that was formal learning or mentorship or self-study or whatever. And yet we still have all the challenges and indeed opportunities we see around us.
We've often thought about leadership as a series of qualities, skills, and tools that we need to develop and apply in right situations to get the results we want. The complexity and pace of change in recent years make it all too clear that we need to learn and adapt to changes as they're happening, instead of seeing things we don't want as problems to be solved, or that they'll go away once we've solved them and life can return to being stable enough.
Many of the assumptions we've long held about life and what we need to do in order to flourish are now out of date. Would be wise then to update our maps of reality so that we're able to better navigate what we find around us in the outer world. That means we need to make good sense of it individually and together through our responses in our inner world, what we might call our inner nature, so that we can make good decisions about what to do in response and then enact them. In other words, what we do together, what we change, how we organise, and how we get things done.
To know our inner nature means better understanding why we think and feel as we do, that much of our behaviour is learned as we move through life, and that perhaps the current situation we find ourselves in is asking us to actually behave in new, even unfamiliar ways. We're not born knowing how to take care of ourselves and flourish in the world. We have to learn what that means and then practice it. From being able to dress ourselves, to driving a car, to being in a happy relationship, we're constantly learning and adapting. That continues when we're leaders with positions of formal responsibility, where we often need to grow into those roles and then adapt as they evolve. Or in teams who want to work fruitfully and successfully together, and may find it hard. We can learn to not just react to situations, but to creatively explore what is possible in them and where best to put our energy and resources. In other words, we practice emotional, relational, and spiritual intelligence. They're no longer just words in the models we learn on a leadership program.
For the things we have to learn before we can do them, we learn by doing them, said Hannah Arendt, the American historian and philosopher who had a notable influence on politics in her time. Anyone who's ever had to create something new and innovate knows firsthand that this is true. Or anyone who's learned to ride a bicycle, drive a car, ski, play tennis, bring up children. In other words, perhaps all of us in different ways and situations. And as much as we might like maps or sat-navs or models to show us where to go and what to do, we're all experiencing more and more directly that the map is not the territory or that the model doesn't work in real life. At best, it might show us direction of travel. Often, it's just the wrong map or the wrong tool. Brief Thoughts on Maps, a poem by Miroslav Volop. The young lieutenant of a small Hungarian detachment in the Alps sent a reconnaissance unit out into the icy wasteland. It began to snow immediately. Snowed for 2 days and the unit did not return. The lieutenant suffered. He dispatched his own people to death. But the third day, the unit came back. Where had they been? How had they made their way? Yes, they said, We considered ourselves lost and waited for the end. And then one of us found a map in his pocket. That calmed us down. We pitched camp, lusted out the snowstorm, and then with a map, we discovered our bearings. And here we are. The lieutenant borrowed this remarkable map and had a good look at it. It was not a map of the Alps, but of the Pyrenees.
It feels like a good place to start is to try and define regeneration. What does it mean in your view, Harsha?
Well, I think actually regeneration means a lot of different things, Paul, to different people in different situations, different places, etc. So maybe it's more useful to have quite a broad description of what it means to regenerate because it changes from one context to another. Personally, I think regeneration is about creating the conditions for life to flourish, whether that's you, me, in our environment. It's all about people in place over time, how we learn and adapt together. I think it was in episode 4, we talked about taking a walk in a forest or another natural ecosystem where different species of flora and fauna live side by side. They're obviously both individuals of their species and part of that bigger group that is a species. Sometimes they are in symbiosis, so in other words, they cooperate, they're supportive of one another. And other times they're really competitive. You know, it's not all sweetness and light, let's say, in any kind of natural ecosystem. So obviously, you know, those that can flourish are the ones that can adapt as quickly and as well as possible as conditions in the forest change. Those are the ones that are going to survive.
So what about technology and artificial intelligence?
So it's a massive topic, isn't it? And I can't by any means, you know, claim to be an expert in any sense on either of those. But for me, technology should be an evolving set of tools that helps biological and social life to flourish, instead of something that is either, you know, controlling us or future-proofing us in some way, which is often, you know, what people might want it to be. That obviously includes AI, which as far as I know, and I, you know, again, I repeat, I'm not an expert by any means, seems to be currently focused mainly on achieving narrow goals. So, you know, in other words, how do you do something specific? You know, how do you, I don't know, have better diagnostic data for something, for example? It's not looking at the whole system that is health, let's say. You know, maybe this is a good topic to talk about in future episodes, as it's so, you know, important for us and particularly thinking about the future. Maybe we can have some guests on that, you know a lot more about it than certainly I do.
So what about regenerative practice? What kinds of things should we be thinking about?
I think there are several broad areas even of practice that can be really useful to consider. Firstly, perhaps, you know, the most essential is that we nurture our relationships. Even if we prefer to be alone or live alone or work alone, whatever, we obviously don't exist in a vacuum. We have relationships with each other and all the different contexts that, you know, we move through. And going back to that, the example, you know, of the forest, the natural ecosystem that we talked about in episode 4, as we move through different contexts, they shape us and we shape them rather. You know, we arrive in the present moment as the fruit of all of our experience and everything that's happened to us to date. And we're all different, you know, we're not the same or one as we often hear is the case today.
Yes, variety or diversity is the spice of life, as they say. It might sound like a no-brainer, but why do you feel it's important to nourish our relationships?
Well, I think there are lots of reasons, you know, so we need each other, even if we're solitary, introverted, whatever, we're actually social animals. We don't all need to be really extroverted. Then there's too much that's going on in the world, you know, today. It's all too entangled, so it's all too connected to make good sense of it by ourselves. So it's something that we really have to do together. And then obviously, you know, when we work in an organisation, we can't just do what the heck we like.
Well, relationships aren't just people in place. They're also about connecting dots between different things, aren't they?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, when we do that, it's possible to start seeing the patterns of thinking and behavior and therefore address them if, you know, there's something that we think we need to do differently. For example, you know, we've created largely organizations that want to grow, scale and become robust so that they can weather, you know, the frequent storms that, seem to happen more and more often today. But that's not really a very wise way to develop resilience if we look to nature or to be able to adapt when, you know, we need to. So, for example, it's really important, really useful that we learn from people who have very different perspectives to ours. You know, that can be really valuable, as hard as it might be in practice.
Yes, true. So what else should we consider?
So, you know, as we surface those patterns of thinking and behaviour, those patterns that connect us, I think it's really important that we tell the truth about what we see, you know, not what people want to hear, and that we make it the norm, you know, make it the usual kind of practice to do so. So we seem to still have quite a lot of illusions about how nature works, so that, you know, for example, we still believe we can have unlimited economic growth on a planet where what we use to fuel that growth, so the natural resources that we use, whether fossil fuels or materials that we use to make, you know, all kinds of stuff, all of those resources are finite, and, you know, we're well aware that, we're using them up at a much quicker pace than, they can, you know, renew themselves. And then, you know, something quite different, but cancel culture isn't the answer either. So, you know, just get rid of everything that's destroying the planet or we don't like in our history or people that don't agree with us, you know, so that we can feel better about the world that we live in. To my mind, at least, and, you know, I'm sure not just mine, but that feels like a really big projection of fear and, you know, about the uncertainty of the future, which is understandable, but not particularly helpful. And a lot of people also feeling really guilty about the present. They look around them and, you know, don't like what they see. And the part that's perhaps more difficult and most important that we address, kind of bring to the surface and do something about, is shame about the past.
So there's an important book by Giles Hutchins and Laura Storm called Regenerative Leadership. And in that, they talk about the four disconnections that we seem to be seeing all over the world right now. The first is the disconnections between humans and nature. The second is the apparent disconnection between masculine energy and feminine energy. The third one is the disconnection between mind, body, and spirit. And the final one was between logic and emotion. And the reason we're putting this retreat together is because we are hoping to do some work with some senior women to help them through the process of doing their own reconnections to those things. Is that about right?
I think so. And I think, you know, also just at a personal level, when we met at a leadership event in Germany just over a year ago, actually, it feels like so much longer.
Yes.
It was last summer. You know, though, I think there was a recognition that you and I are holding combinations of those things and that we were really curious to bring those together and see how that could help to create an amazing experience for women who want to explore these disconnections.
Exactly.
And I get a sense from the research that we've both done that these are themes that keep coming up over and over again, not necessarily in that precise language, but that you know, we've reached an inflection point. We recognize that things need to be different. How do we do that?
So exactly.
The why of the retreats is to give women that opportunity for exploration.
Yeah, and also just you know, another thing that's coming to me as we're talking is that, you know, there's a lot of energy and action and let's cancel everything that, you know, we think is not working, or we make these, you know, strong judgments about whether something is good or not or whatever. And rather than sort of pour fuel or, you know, on the flames of that, wiping everything out and starting all over again, it's really about exploration and healing, and there's so many different, you know, aspects that could be explored, so that it's a process of integration.
Yes.
As opposed to let's just scratch everything and start all over again and ways that we should do or shouldn't do. And what I think we both really want to get away from that kind of approach to dealing with some of the challenges.
I agree. I think it's too easy to throw away.
Yeah.
The baby out with the bathwater, as the expression goes. And I think you have to find where you are now to be able to say, right, this is where we are. This is a recognition of how I truly feel, you know, when I take time to explore that. Mm. And then to go through a thought process of, as a collective and individually, to think about, okay, so where do I want to go now?
I'm a long time coach, facilitator. I work mainly today with executive teams. I have done a lot of work with senior women leaders looking to find their own voice and their own way of leading in quite hierarchical, very geopolitical, often conflict-ridden, mature organizational systems, which they are expected to transform. And exploring with them, how can they do that in ways that allow them to be themselves, you know, to be who they are. They're often, you know, really smart, powerful, competitive, high achieving, you know, amazing women that do amazing things in their spare time that, you know, I'm like astounded by. That's not who I am. But I have found that what I can bring as a woman moving through those systems, as somebody who comes in and out and, you know, knows them well, the systems, knows the dynamics, knows the challenges, knows the stories, the narratives that get told, can be really effective in helping them to find their own way through. So that's what is bringing me into doing the work. And in coming together with Paul, we met at a leadership circle event. That's one of the systems of leadership that we've both been interested in along the way. At an event not much more than a year ago. And I'll let Paul, you know, talk about your own work in that. But in, you know, starting to experiment with Paul about some of the work that he will also bring, I think, into the retreat, there was a really lovely connection of bringing that. You mentioned about the disconnect between masculine and feminine and being in nature. And I think those were, for me, at least, the particular sort of things that got me really curious about how could we bring these, you know, who we are, together into something to create the kind of experience we want to offer to the women that will take part.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, my work's been, so I've been a coach for 13 years. And as part of becoming a coach, you end up doing your own work.
Fundamental part.
Yeah, absolutely fundamental. And what's been interesting is when you then go out into the world and say, hey, I'm a coach, who can I serve? My clients have been senior women, not because I've necessarily gone out and said, hey, senior women, come and work with me, but simply somehow that's the way it's ended up. And they're in large corporate size, a management consultant working all over the world for 20 plus years. And saw all kinds of things. You know, I worked with 40 plus global companies in different states of change and progress, and looking at the systems in there, what worked, what didn't. I got involved in training what might be called soft skills. And the more you delve into that, the more you get a sense of dissatisfaction. So I was lucky to do a TED talk in 2019. And there's this astonishing figure in there that still boggles my mind and most people's minds because it's just so big, which is they estimated we spent $366 billion globally on training leaders around the world in various terms. There was a part of me that said, well, if that's the case, why is it not working? I couldn't do that. So I couldn't figure out what that was. And so I wanted to find new ways of moving away from let's all fly to a hotel in Copenhagen, let's do flip charts, let's do role plays, let's do models, which are all very valid. But if they're not working, we need to do something, not necessarily throw the baby out with the bathwater, but we need to try other things. And my experience is you have to teach the whole person. So therefore, you have to bring the body into play. That doesn't happen in hotel conference rooms too often, if at all. Mm. And I think that's essential. I think also we need to bring people outside. So, you know, this flying into an airport, going to the hotel, spending 3 days in a conference room, getting in a taxi, going back to the hotel, you know, you miss out on a whole bunch of things that could open up people to new ideas, new ways of being, new ways of connecting. Mm. That those curriculums don't do. And so when I came to Göttingen and we met, I was bringing, so if you read my material on LinkedIn, you'll find out that I do martial arts, I'm a black belt in Aikido. And I wanted to find a way, well, it's not so much that, it's how do you take those principles and that we learn on the mat and learn them off the mat because they are so relevant. And so when I was in Göttingen, I devised a class and it fortunately went really well. That's where we met.
That's cool.
And what I loved about working with you was there is a creative tension here between us that is this masculine feminine energy in kind of the way it's supposed to work. So we're not always sweetness and light. We sometimes have the odd difficult conversation, but we get through it. But we respect how each of us comes to the table and what we bring, and we're still learning what that is, and we want people to share in that. We want our participants to do that, because what we learned from the research we did was it isn't about fixing women. They don't need fixing. They're fine. They're successful. They're strong. Absolutely. What they need to do is reconnect and rediscover and find their voice again, not because they never had one, they did, but to go back into that and go, oh, I've got time, I've got space, I've got other people to commune with. And, you know, we've got masculine energy and feminine energy in the room facilitating this and in the outdoors. Hopefully that will become a catalyst.
I'm sure
that will spark conversations around an agenda that takes people through a whole cognitive experience and also an embodied experience where there's a great deal of freedom to explore that without judgment, and in a way that is safe for each of the participants.
Yeah, it's very realistic, you know. So coming back to what you were mentioning earlier, Paul, about, you know, the amount of money that's spent on leadership development, right? And leadership is so contextual today. With the challenges that we face, you know, even within a very structured environment, etc., for people to be able to find small but powerful ways to connect with each other, to use the tech that is available in ways that's effective, you know, to find, to use some sort of technical language for a moment, affordance and agency, are fundamental in being able to be effective.
Okay.
And I think, you know, that's what we really want people to be able to explore here.
Yeah.
And in such a way that they can go back into daily life and for it to be really useful.
Yeah. I mean, the echo chamber that is LinkedIn, we keep seeing the same messages over and over again, and they're actually not, they're useful reminders in some ways, but they're reminders of what the old is and the whole world, you know, as we come out of the pandemic and into this environment that is perhaps more chaotic than it's ever been, more uncertain than it's ever been, then we need something new to emerge. But that comes from individuals. It doesn't come from people saying, do it like us. It doesn't come from people saying, here's a change initiative that's going to change your organization. Because the change, as we were saying earlier when we were walking back to the woods, we were saying, you know, change is an individual decision. You know, and it's a dance. It's not a light switch.
In my organizational workshops, I often ask the question, does the outer world create our inner experience, or does in some way our inner experience influence and create the outer one?
Now, that might sound like a really strange question for busy, often executive teams who are used to delivering in high-pressure or very political environments. However, it does make us stop and think for a moment. Life often feels like it's something that happens to us, but in fact, that's not really the case. It's really difficult to see what we need to do or to have a certain amount of choice if we can't see what's possible. We might call that our affordance, or where we want to put our resources, our energy, our time, our money, etc., that we could think of as our agency. Our inner nature is just that. We often think about the fact that we, or we consider ourselves to be independent beings with our own thoughts, feelings, ideas, perspectives, beliefs, whatever. Our inner nature is, like I say, just that. Everything that's going on for us in any moment. Let's think though, when we arrive in any moment, we're the product or the fruit of all the experience that went before it. We move through lots of different contexts. They shape us and we shape them. So we arrive with the sum or the collage, if you like this picture, of all the things that we've been through already. The anthropologist and polymath Gregory Bateson famously said that the major problems in the world arise from the difference between how nature works and how people think. If we take a walk through a forest or any other kind of ecosystem where there's lots of different kinds of life, we will see quite quickly, we'll notice, or you know, all the different plants, all the different animals or insects that might be living there. If we walk a little bit further and think about that ecosystem, we might start to reflect on the fact that all of those different forms of flora and fauna are living there together. They compete and they collaborate in continuation, both as an individual member of their own species and as part of that whole. Teams and organizations are quite similar. There are things that we need to do at certain times. There is a natural cycle of birth, growth, death, and composting, just like in the forest, in order to let new things emerge. We can't keep things going forever. So as the outer world becomes more difficult, conditions like the economy, climate change, social unrest, and so on, it might be quite wise that we think about regenerating both our inner nature and the outer one.
I'm loving how these themes have just popped out quite naturally as we've made the first series of the podcast, Asha.
Yes, you know, as a content editor, I did have an idea of where we'd be going with the series. I didn't just pick it up. But then we grouped a little bit at the start of the year and started to share some key ideas, foundations, let's say, to explore in depth in the second series.
Absolutely. And a good story tells itself in a sense as well.
Yes, that's very true. There seem to be, you know, natural structures and rhythms that emerge as we come into conversations together. We don't always need to have a clear plan of where we're headed. In fact, it's, you know, just like maps that we described in the first video here today.
Yes, and as we all know, the map is not the territory. We need to develop our intuition, pay attention to the signs and synchronicities too.
Definitely. I think that's a great topic to talk about with our guests in the next series as well.
Brilliant. So next time we'll be sharing the second thematic episode with you all from this series of the Pocket Dojo podcast,
which will be all about how we can start to develop as leaders and teams in much more regenerative ways to find our own voice and agency for the essential work of creating conditions where all life can flourish.
Until then, bye for now.
See you soon.